You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
Aries Kutke is a multidisciplinary artist and textile practitioner from Auckland, New Zealand. Lately, his work has drawn from his own heritage as a Parsi Zoroastrian, whose family come from the Indian diaspora of refugees from Persia. He studied art history and English at the University of Auckland and currently practices his work between New Zealand, parts of Europe and India. I spoke with him earlier today because today is marking the Iranian-Persian New Year, and I also wanted to talk a little bit about his experiences as a minority in New Zealand following Friday's terror attack in Christchurch. So today marks Nowruz, which is the Iranian New Year, also known as the Persian New Year.
The Persian New Year. Well, I mean, it is, when you look at it globally and ecologically, the spring solstice in the Northern Hemisphere. And I guess for us in the Southern Hemisphere, it's the autumn solstice. Mm. I guess I'd like to begin by wishing everyone a Nowruz Mubarak, and to everyone in the Persian, I guess Persia was a ginormous empire, and the celebration of Nowruz just spreads so wide. So to everyone, all the races, creeds, ethnicities, and religions that celebrate it. Yeah.
So tell me a little bit about the history of the holiday, just to start off. So it's celebrated across the Persian region, which is now obviously not Persia, but many different countries. So how is that? How does that work now? Who's celebrating?
Well, what I would say is that Nowruz began as a celebration of the spring solstice by the oldest known monotheistic faith, Zoroastrianism, of which I am one of the... I wouldn't say I practice Zoroastrianism, but I was born of Zoroastrian faith. Mm-hmm. And there's only 290,000 of us in the world. So we're quite a dying little race.
Do your parents practice?
Yeah, my parents, my family practices, and we're part of the Indian diaspora of Parsis that immigrated. Well, my ancestors immigrated from Iran after the conquest. And they came by sea and landed on the coast of Gujarat in Iran, in India, from Iran, or back then Persia. And we settled in India and sort of maintained cultural practices and until this day celebrated. And Nowruz as a holiday is celebrated by Parsis, but also quite widely by the Islamic communities and the Zoroastrian communities in Iran. It's a time of, you know, reflecting on extremely peaceful practices in Islam and India, in Islam and Zoroastrianism across India, Iran, Tajikistan, Russia, Afghanistan, Azerbaijan, Turkey, and Kurdistan, which straddles Iraq and Iran. Mm. So as you can see, it's quite a widely celebrated holiday.
So what sort of practices do you take place to celebrate?
So it actually doesn't begin today. It should have begun 7 days ago.
Yeah, so today's the last day.
Yeah, today's the eighth day. So 7 days before today, each Persian or each household that celebrates Nowruz would have what we call a Hafsin table. The Hafsin table is just this little, I guess, to put it in Western terms, it's kind of like a cornucopia. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure the Romans got that from the Persians. Mm. So the idea of a bounty presented and offered, not just to whichever god or deity one worships, but also to any who pass by or pass through your home or your threshold, you offer that to them. So the Hafsin table consists of wheat that is sprouted from day one and grows in a little bowl or a container that on Nowruz is taken to a field or a garden and planted somewhere.
That's really beautiful.
Yeah, it's basically just this way of celebrating fertility. Mm. And
very symbolic in nature.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Totally. And then you have the seven S's from the Persian language, from Farsi. I unfortunately don't know all of them, but I don't know all of them in Farsi. I know them in English, or at least some of them in English. It consists of vinegar, wine, gold, eggs, or gold of some kind, fruit, vegetation. I think garlic is one of them, quite symbolic because it's a root. Mm. And of course, flowers, nuts, and wine. Yeah.
Mm. So just thinking about how, I mean, the 7 days that have just been in New Zealand, I mean, it's been a pretty traumatizing experience for a lot of New Zealanders. It's absolutely horrific.
Yeah.
How would this festival of celebration tie into a lot of the people, the Muslim community, who are potentially grieving right now? Would it be a potential gateway for them to maybe help them through the grief? Or is that what it sort of represents, could represent?
I mean, the first thing that we must acknowledge and give most of our attention and weight to is the grief and mourning the loss of innocent lives due to an unprecedented physical act of terror. And I think that, perhaps something like Nowruz could stand as a symbolic gesture of unity between all of these cultures, which are quite diverse today. I mean, when you say Persia, when you said Persia 3,000 years ago, or even 2,000 years ago, it might have been different, but Persia today is extremely diverse and extremely...
Many different religions.
Many different religions.
Cultures.
Many cultures, and a lot of them, perhaps in conflict with one another, but at a time like this, it is definitely a great time and place to be standing in solidarity. So perhaps Nowruz could be that occasion when this happens, and not just within, Indo-Persian communities, but also in solidarity with New Zealanders of all races who could sort of come together at a time like this.
Mm. All right, moving on a little bit. After Friday's attack, I saw you post on Facebook, you wrote a letter addressed to the white men, the older white men of Howick and Greater Auckland, calling them out for their behaviour towards you specifically as a minority group. Did you want to have a little talk about it?
I mean, I just think that perhaps it might just be easier if I read the post.
Yeah, absolutely.
And then we could discuss it, because it'll give someone context, if one hasn't read or seen the post. Didn't say white men, but it was implied. because I guess since I was a child, it would have been that faction of the community that would have mostly questioned or made me feel this certain way.
Mm.
As a person of color, as a child of color. So anyways, I'll read the post out. So it says, "Dear old men of Howick and Greater Auckland, I grew up in Tamaki Makaurau, where I continue to practice my work 19 years since my family immigrated here. But still, feel free to stare, feel free to other us, feel free to be amazed by my ability to have grasped the English language. I speak four more just as fluently, FYI. Feel free to process my physical appearance and find that my demeanor shatters the narrow range of preconceived stereotypes that you've kindly reserved for my race, and then still feel free to ask me where I'm from, simply because of how I look. Here's what I'll say with the kindest possible tone that one might conjure under all the anger, fear, and disillusionment felt by us today. I'm from Aotearoa, New Zealand, just like you." And that was just my very, very triggered reaction to some of the incidents that occurred after Friday.
Yeah.
Around Howick.
And I mean, in a way, before Friday as well.
And of course, before Friday. But on Friday, I think that it was extremely palpable, the tension that I could sense when I walked into a room, for example, a bar or a cafe. You know, I live in East Auckland, and I've grown up in East Auckland, and I've been privy to such experiences, and I've often, walked into a room and seen two or three heads turn 180 degrees and continue to sort of stare me down as I enter a room, sort of the only person of color walking into the room. And I just remember on Friday, I was just so sad, and that sadness, and then you have a bit of grief, but then there's anger. And there's fear for your kind, and it manifested in a little bit of rage, I must admit, internally quite, hostile, but I would never externalize it, and I never have. But I was just thinking to myself, if one fucker looks at me the way they've been looking at me for the last 19 years, like, I don't know what I'm going to do. Mm. And surprise, surprise, it happened as I walked into, I won't name the place because I, you know, have nothing against the business, but I walked into this cafe and, you know, middle-aged Pakeha man looked me up and down, turned his neck 180 degrees, and as I walked past him and stared him right back into the, you know, in his eyes, turned his head around again, continuing to look at me from the other direction as I walked past him towards the bar. And I think this was the first instance where I actually returned my gaze intensely into his eyes. And I think that in some way that was my way of saying, you know, there is a problem.
Yep.
And you are part of it.
And do you think that this is now an opportunity for a lot of New Zealanders to address that problem that was there, that a lot of people...
The systemic microaggressions.
Mm. Yeah. I mean, we were talking before about Jacinda Ardern, who in her first speech she said, "This is not us," and has since probably learnt that this is us.
It's not the best side of us, and it's definitely not something that the rest of the world knows about us, or that even we knew about ourselves. And I must say that, you know, we haven't been great at addressing issues that have been unsavory. We've often swept things under the rug. And I don't mean on a political scale or on a large platform. Even somewhere like here, I would say it's a relatively wide-reaching platform. I mean in houses, in bars, sitting around tables with friends, people that you know you should be able to openly converse about problems with. The issue of racial discrimination, microaggressions, othering, and everything that goes along with it in factions of the community, even such as the queer communities. These are things that we don't openly address. We find them quite unsavory as Kiwis, and we kind of have this nature to only want to focus on the good and not sort of address the sort of more insidious parts of our psyches. And I think that if any good could come from such a tragedy, it would be us being willing to partake in constructive rhetoric around these problems.
Around, you know, up to 8 or 10,000.
Shit.
The Wire.
That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95BFM.com/bcasts.